The paper that I wrote is in response to a project that I worked on a number of years ago in about 2006. So as a co-op, an intern at AMD in about 2003 or so, I worked on a project to do some log analysis work using more traditional methods. So I had, just as a kind of a research project, had gone through and was parsing through syslog data, and I was dumping it onto a MySQL database and trying to do all these SQL queries on it to try to find correlations, and basically ended up finding that it doesn't scale to do it that way. And so in 2006, after I was a full-time staff member, there was a real need to replace this system that was at the time based on Swatch with something that was more robust, that could handle more log volume, and that would take advantage of AMD's upcoming architectures with multiple cores, the high memory bandwidths, lots of memory capacity. And so we figured if we have the hardware, we might as well try to do something to take advantage of it in this area. So the official project goals were that we needed to be able to scale to tens of gigs of log data per day per cluster. We needed to take advantage of multiple processors, obviously. We needed to be able to correlate events in real time. The systems that that I had been working on, just kind of as research as an intern, it was all batch processing, which wasn't very useful when you wanted to find out when a disk failed or when memory failed on a system if you had to wait 24 hours for the next batch to run. And finally, and this is the most important one, was that the correlation rules needed to be easy to use, easy to create, easy to modify. We had a bunch of systems engineers that wanted to take advantage of getting the data that was in the logs, but they couldn't get to it unless there was some easy way to write a rule that would do something intelligent for them and correlate some information. So before we started, we obviously wanted to see if there was anything out there that would meet the needs, that so we didn't have to build something ourselves. The two things that kind of rose to the top at the time, remember this was in 2006, was SEC and Splunk. SEC, great piece of software. I think that it does a lot of good things really well. Given the project goals, it mostly failed on the correlation rules being easy, modify, and create. It was the language you had to use to input rules into SEC were reasonably off-putting enough for my fellow staff members that I got mostly a thumbs down when I proposed it as being a shrink wrap solution that, hey, we can just implement this and it'll do all that. And so we looked at Splunk, which, again, fantastic product, does really neat things with log visualization and event correlation, but was obviously expensive. And the indexer, at least at the time, didn't scale to our log volumes. We could run up to a few hundred megs of log data per day, and then the indexer would fall over. Remember, that was old version 1.0. I'm sure it's gotten way better since then, so I don't want to say anything bad about Splunk. I think it's good stuff, but at the time, it didn't meet our needs. So what we ended up doing was building something ourselves. And this was the architecture that that we came up with. So effectively, what we have is you have syslog-ng as kind of the core routing infrastructure in the center of everything. You've got systems sending their syslog data directly into syslog-ng the way they normally would, using a centralized log architecture over the network. And then to capture things that aren't syslog, we built a streamer component, which is basically just a Perl script that tails files or tails standard out and formats the message to look like a sane syslog message. It can do some other interesting things like send heartbeats and stuff, but it uses the same transport protocol. So it goes ahead and sends syslog messages into syslog-ng. Now, syslog-ng has a number of rules in it that that are able to filter and route log messages. And those rules are actually contained within the rule engines as metadata. So when you write a rule engine, which is doing the actual processing of the event correlation, you can put meta statements at the top of that rule engine in the comments that the VTech installer will parse out and create a syslogng.conf for you. Now, in addition to that, that gets the messages into something that looks like code that we can start working with. But at that point, we have a bunch of duplicated code now. We have all these rule engines that are great, but how do we maintain information and data about them? And how do we take action in a sane way? And so we implemented a variable server, which is a way for all the rule engines to maintain their state and maintain rate data, and we'll talk about some of the stuff in that later on. and an action server, which allows us to queue actions like sending emails or sending out jobs to repair systems or anything along those lines. So let's talk about the rule engines first, and we'll get to the other components in a minute. The rule engines are written in Perl for the most part, but you can write them in anything you want. We write them in Perl because there's a bunch of stuff we've written in support infrastructure that makes them really easy to write in Perl. And they interact with the variable and action servers. So here's just a sample rule engine. You see you just kind of instantiate your interfaces to the variable and action server. You can set up these things called thresholds, which is where the variable server will actually inject new syslog messages into the stream when certain conditions are met, like a variable exceeds a value or drops below a value or a rate exceeds a value. And then you just you look at your standard in and start parsing data. And so you take your message, and there's a built-in parse function in the framework that lets you break it all out into a hash, and then you just start doing your own event correlation in a native language like Perl. Now, the variable server, I feel, is one of the more innovative things of VTech, and this wasn't born out of a research project or something. It was really just born out of necessity. What we found was that when we were trying to develop something to analyze log messages, what we were really interested in was less alerting on events or tracking certain events, and we really just wanted rate data. We wanted to know how often certain things were happening or when certain things happened after something else. So we didn't really need to store anything in a database. We didn't need to store anything about the messages except their rate data. So we kind of started with a core component, which we call a scaler, which just stores an arbitrary value and a timeout that represents how long that value is valid. So here's an example of how a scaler might be used. So your message comes in, and you decide that you want to send an email, but you want to rate flood it, or prevent it from flooding. So you would check a scaler. You'd see if the value was zero, which means it's timed out or doesn't have a value or isn't set. Then you'd go and send the mail, and then you'd set that scaler to, in this case, a one-hour timeout. And that means the next time this event happens, it'll check that scaler. It'll see that it has a value because it hasn't timed out yet, and then it'll avoid resending that email. This is just a very, very simple basic way of preventing multiple emails or something from happening over and over again. An extension of the scaler is an alarm, which is basically a scaler that's paired with a threshold in the variable server. So you can set an alarm when a certain message comes in, and then the variable server, when that scaler times out, will automatically inject a threshold exceeded message, or in this case a timeout message, into the log stream that you can then pick up and take action later. Which means that your rule engines don't have to maintain their state. They can just fire and forget things. They can do something and then go on working on something else, and the variable server takes care of reminding it when they need to go do something else. And if you look in the paper, there are some code examples demonstrating how you can use alarms to actually make intelligent decisions about, okay, I saw this message, but now if another message comes in later, then I need to do one thing, but if it doesn't come, I need to do something else. Building on the scaler, we came up with what's called an incrementer. And an incrementer is a collection of scalers that are used to count the number of events over some window of time. So usually you would set the incrementer amount to a number, like one. And as every time you set the incrementer, it just basically starts building an array with all the unexpired scalers in that array. And so if you have to kind of imagine in your head, and I do have some backup slides to help visualize it, but you can see in this example that you can use it to create a rate of, say, 10 EXT3 errors for every 10 seconds, which boils down to a rate of 1 per second. So in this little short example, I show how you can be looking for EXT3 errors, and you use the set incrementer each time one of those comes in, and then you can test for the value of that incrementer to see if you've exceeded the rate that you wanted to test for, in which case you can take some action. Now, I should note that these examples are demonstrating stuff where we're actually maintaining things like state inside the rule engine itself. What you would really do is set a threshold somewhere earlier and let the variable server actually remind you when this variable has exceeded a value of 10, so you don't have to check it at all. You just wait for the variable server to inject a message saying, hey, this variable, this incrementer has exceeded a threshold, you need to go do something. And then a list is the final layer of abstraction where you can take a number of incrementers and you just stick them into a Perl hash is all it is. So you have a bunch of incrementers that are each referenced by a key. And this is useful because you can aggregate information across a number of incrementers. So you can say, have in this example, we're looking for NFS server problems. So we capture the host name of the NFS server that isn't responding, and then we use that variable, that value, as a key in the list. And then we can do some interesting things, because the way incrementers work is they'll return nothing if there's nothing in the incrementer that that isn't timed out. And so if you just look at the number of keys in the list, you can see a rate of how many unique systems have reported this message. You can look at the total value of all the incrementers summed across the whole list and see a rate for the entire cluster. Or you can look at an individual key and you can just look up the rate for that individual system. So given those different pieces of information you can get, you have one kind of compact, neat little piece of data that you can look at in different ways to get different kinds of rate data about your environment. And in this example, it just shows that if we exceed a rate of 50 unique hosts reporting within a 60-second period that they're not responding, then we know something's wrong. It's not just a random occurrence out in the grid. So as I mentioned before, the variable server is all about keeping the state out of the rule engines. You want the rule engines to be as simple as possible. You want it to express the correlation that you want to make without having to be bogged down with, oh, I need to back up my state. Oh, I need to store everything in this giant hash. I need to instantiate all these objects. And what happens when I get restarted? The variable server takes care of that for everything. Not to mention that, but it's also got a common namespace. So you can have rule engines that can share information. You have one rule engine that sets a scalar or an incrementer or something and a threshold that another rule engine watches for and then can take action on that. Or you can have them both probing things. You can have multiple rule engines all incrementing the same variable at the same time. It uses locks to make sure that all the rule engines can communicate without stomping on each other. The action server is useful because you can queue jobs and alerts and stuff so that if there is some sort of a flood, you don't prevent critical things from getting out that you needed to. And the action server also is able to queue jobs by a certain time. So say there's an event that happens, like a disk failure in a RAID set that has a spare. That's something you want to know about, but you don't necessarily need to page an admin right away. So you might queue a job in the action server that says, wait until 8 in the morning or 10 in the morning, and then send out that alert reminding us that, hey, this disk failed. And so it was behaviors like that that we wanted. Obviously, this is not the only way you can queue jobs. We just thought this would be a good way to do it since it was kind of compact and in Perl and written with VTech. But we're not intending to rewrite LSF or anything like that. So here's some example ways that we've used the various rule engines in VTech at AMD. The most common is for failed hardware. So anyone that's administered a big cluster of Linux machines knows that occasionally you get ext3 or ECC errors, but it doesn't always mean that anything's failed. What you care about is a high rate. You want to see if a bunch of ext3 errors or a bunch of ECC errors have showed up on the console or in the log. So we have rule engines that watch for these messages and then look for exceeded rates and then notify admins or create tickets for the operational staff when these thresholds are met, and that also close the system's new jobs so that they're cleared and ready to be fixed when the ops staff gets to them. As I mentioned before in the previous example, we also do the NFS file server checks. So this can help us detect things like a network outage or a spanning tree event in our network when suddenly a big cluster of machines can't get to a bunch of NFS file servers. It can also do the opposite. If a file server goes down, immediately all the systems say, hey, I can't get to this NFS server. And again, it's a rate. You know, if one machine or 10 machines in the grid lose their network connectivity, you know, it's something, but it's not a huge event. So we can use rate information to say if a bunch of machines in a very short amount of time report this and we can set a threshold for that, then it is important and we do need to be notified. The interactive load monitor collator is kind of neat. This is an example of how we're able to do interesting things by collating information into a single rule engine. So we have a bunch of interactive systems where users are allowed to log in and run their engineering tools and stuff. And occasionally, they do bad things. They run jobs that take too much memory or eat too much CPU. And we have cron jobs on the systems that occasionally just look at the process list, and they say, OK, these are bad processes. But instead of doing anything about it, they just send a syslog message saying, this is a bad process I see on the system. And it just does that. Every 5 minutes, just keeps sending out these syslog messages. The VTech server has then a rule engine that can collate this information across hundreds of different interactive machines so that it can send out a single report to that user that says, hey, you're running these bad processes on these different machines, and not to mention that, it can also take all of those reports and aggregate them into one for the sysadmins, so that rather than having a bunch of tickets in the ticketing system that say, I need to work on these 50 tickets because of all these different bad users, there's one ticket per day in the system that lists all the things they need to look at for that day, so that if they need to go call users that haven't been killing their processes or something. And this can be really useful because you can't just be draconian and kill everything that looks bad. Sometimes there are legitimate reasons that people need to be running it. So you need to have something that can kind of collate this information and then forward it along to a human that's intelligent enough to figure out what to do. And another one that's been pretty handy is reboot loop detection. So again, rate data. If we see the boot data OK message show up from a system, I think it's more than 5 times in a 90-minute period, then we assume the system has got something wrong. It's maybe segfaulting when it boots up and just keeps going into a loop. And so we can alert ops staff. We can close the system and hopefully prevent it from creating any further damage. Obviously, we want this thing to be fast. That was one of the requirements for the project. And it is working very well. We're currently handling about 10 gigs per day at our largest clusters. And we have 21 rule engines, so we have 21 different types of event correlations we're doing in these rule engines. Some of them are very complex, such as the collator I was talking about. Some are really simple, like every time you see this message, send an email to some random admin that just wants to see when this message pops up. The multi-threading is working quite well. The variable server and the action server both use Perl threads, so they're able to spread out their workloads and share data internally so that it can do things like locking and service multiple rule engines at the same time. And of course, the rule engine, syslog, and all this stuff is in different processes. So a typical VTEX server may have as many as 25 or 30 processes that are actively using the CPU, which is great when our newest MagnaCore systems have 24 processors. So more and more processors means more and more threading is obviously going to give you better performance. But there are some bottlenecks. Syslog-ng is probably our biggest bottleneck, aside from the one below that, because it's a single thread. So you have one thread that's handling all the incoming messages and having to sort them. It doesn't have to do anything but sort, but it is having to do that task. And we have found that the regular expression engine in Syslog-ng is fairly slow, but if you pair it up with some stuff that kind of limits the amount of stuff the regular expression engine has to use, you can make it go acceptably fast. But if you just have a bunch of match rules, which are just regular expressions on, and that's it, it bogs down after a few gigs per day of traffic. The incrementer is probably our biggest issue right now, and we do have some work in that area. The calculation routine, since it assumes that you could be setting an arbitrary number to the increment instead of just one, which would be easy to optimize, it doesn't scale well with frequent events because it has to scan over the entire list of incrementers every time it's queried. And so the routine is O of N. And obviously, with something of O of N, when you start scaling up to things like gigs of stuff a day, it doesn't scale very well. In fact, past about 200 events a second for that particular incrementer, it starts to fall over and the response time gets too slow. Some challenges that we've seen, obviously the variable server performance because of the incrementers has been a challenge, but we do have some ideas for a new routine where you assume that the increment's one, and then we use a sorting method using quicksort, which is log n, to actually do the calculation. And so we've got some ideas for it, and we've got some sample code, and we think that's going to make it scale much better into the future, so we do have some tricks up our sleeve. The feedback from the action. So I haven't mentioned much about actions and feedback. One of the nice things about VTEC is because it's all syslog, you can do this feedback loop. So, and that's used very heavily within the variable server so that you can do things like thresholds where you can inject new messages back into the log stream and find out when variables have disappeared or have exceeded a threshold value. But the action server doesn't have anything like that built in. So if you queue a job and send it off to go do something, unless you explicitly program that job to inject messages into the log stream, which you could do, it doesn't have any automatic way within the rule engine to have the rule engine query the job like you would with LSF or something. And like I said, we didn't try to re-implement LSF or anything. It's not that wasn't our goal, but it was one of the areas that we kind of wished that we had put some little more logic in there so that after you fire off a job, there was some built-in automatic method for querying it to see what its status was. Some lessons learned after doing all this. We've obviously been using it for 4+ years, and it's been doing great. And for anyone that's kind of looking to do something like this, you got to think about scalability from the ground up, especially multi-core. It doesn't matter how good your code is if it's single-threaded. That's not the way things are scaling these days. You got to spread out and use as many cores as you possibly can on these big systems that you get these days. Another is that RAM is cheap. You know, getting a 64-gig system isn't that big these days. So instead of trying to use something like a MySQL database or a Berkeley database, do it in memory. Memory's cheap. Just use these giant in-memory data structures. They're orders of magnitude faster than anything else, even if they're kind of ugly. And then use some sort of a syncing algorithm to maintain the state on disk later on. And abstraction is really, really powerful. Being able to abstract rate data into just a simple query to an incrementer has been invaluable for fairly lay people, sysadmins that aren't really familiar with the system, to just jump right in and write a quick 5 or 6 line rule engine that gets them what they want. And so that's been really powerful. And also being able to break up complex correlations. So we have something that has multiple stages of correlation. We can break that up into multiple rule engines, and that's been really powerful. And don't underestimate the power of familiarity. The fact that it's all written in Perl and that Perl is the language of sysadmins is not a, well, it was at least up until Python started getting really popular, is a good thing. It means that people were able to jump into it. You know, even interns that had never done it before could jump right into some Perl and be able to get something done, whereas something that's more arcane would have been a lot tougher to pick up. And that's it. So I think I did right about the right amount of time. I'll take some questions.
So are you guys, two questions actually, is all your time set to UTC? Or
that's something that we'd like to do. In fact, Corey's over here nodding because we've talked about that before. It's not today. Right now we're in a position where the VTEC servers are cluster local. So they don't actually talk to each other.
Okay.
They could. There's no reason they couldn't. We could just put a variable server where everyone could query them from all the sites. And you could probably still get useful data. We don't often use the timestamps for anything because all we're storing just anonymous rate data in the incrementers and in the scalers. So there isn't we haven't had a big push to use UTC because we haven't had a problem we couldn't solve without it.
Okay. The other question is, had you ever considered, instead of having an action server, just using your batch processing to do the actions?
Absolutely. In fact, that was the original design when I first started working on it, was we would just bsub jobs into the grid. The reason that we didn't do that was that that didn't give us, at least at the time, the ability to say when the job was going to run. It would just say, run it. So we would have ended up having to write a queuing system already to do the bsubs when we wanted to run it, and what we really wanted was that ability to say, only page me after 8 a.m., after 10 a.m. or something, which was, and it was pretty easy to write. It wasn't a huge investment, and you still can, I could write a rule in the action server that bsubs a job if I needed to.
Leon Towns von Stauber, Intellius. So I have two questions, a general and a specific one. Mm-hmm. The first one is, you note that SEC has more sophistication than Swatch, but you pay for it in the complexity, which I agree with. I'm all for simplifying that, but I'm not sure that replacing fairly complex-looking rules with full-on Perl code is really doing that. I was wondering if you could speak to
well,
that some more.
I hesitate to say that we're replacing it with full-on Perl code, because I think one of the values that we've done in VTEC, and it's more evident in the paper. I don't have a lot of time to do a lot of in-depth examples, but we've done a lot of work abstracting the complexity out of the Perl script. So there's a lot of interfaces and modules we've written so that, you know, the most simple basic correlations are usually like 2 lines of Perl. I mean, there's just really not much there. But that's for the simple case. When you start getting to these more complex correlations, especially in SEC, the complexity gets up almost exponential trying to handle all these different things that are interrelated, whereas with Perl, yeah, it's going to be a lot of, you know, a chunk of code, but it's going to be a chunk of code that an average sysadmin would be able to look at and say, hey, I know what that's doing.
Okay, so my specific question kind of addresses that as well. In your paper, the second example you have with the NFS server detecting whether it's up or down, so you state that it'll alert if the number of unique systems reporting this message for a particular file server exceeds 50 in a given five-minute period, but it doesn't look like the rule or the correlation that you wrote actually does anything with the name of the reporting host. And the reason I bring this up is because you relate that to an example in the SEC paper presented a few years ago, which is complex. I mean, I would say it's unnecessarily complex. But if you're not doing anything with the reporting host name...
Well, we actually are. So if you see here, and again, this is just the shortened version, but we're capturing the name of the server here.
That's the name of the NFS server, right?
Right. And then we're setting this NFS server variable with it. And then when we set the list, we use the key in the list is the name of the NFS server. And then this query here, we're saying get list keys. So we're counting the number of non-timed out keys, which if it's more than 50, meaning more than 50 in 60 seconds. So in the past 60 seconds, if more than 50 unique NFS servers, so there are 50 unique keys, have reported this problem, then we take some action, like notify the ops staff or something like that. So
if there are more than 50 unique NFS servers reporting this?
So in this example, we're looking for like a global network outage. So we're saying none of the filers can be contacted. So we've got, you know, 50 NFS servers that aren't responding.
Okay. So what I'm concerned with here is that this isn't really doing the same thing that the example that you relate this to in the SEC paper is doing. There's a false comparison there.
Okay. That may be the case.
This could be done in a single SEC rule. So I'm not sure that you're picking the best example.
That may be the case, but that might even illustrate the point of when I was trying to read through the example in the SEC code, I obviously didn't understand what it was doing, and I made a false comparison.
Okay. Thanks.
David Lang at Intuit. Two questions. One, do you have this source available for people?
Oh, there it is. Okay. So I have gotten lots and lots of interest to make this open source, and I'd love to. There's obviously some legal issues with AMD I'd have to work out because this is technically AMD's intellectual property. They're not just going to go throw it out there until they give the sign off or sign it over to me. So I can't just give anyone the code right now. There's some code examples in the paper. If you want to see what the rule engines look like, just look a little more in depth. If it looks like there's enough community support that I wouldn't have to spend 8 hours a day working on this as a lead, I'd be willing to start working from AMD side to get the legal sign-offs and stuff to try to make this available to the public. But I can assure you that if I did that, it would be pretty raw code that would show up at first. We'd need a lot of community support to clean it up and make it enterprise, well, to make it ready for general consumption rather than specific to AMD.
The second thing, you mentioned SysLogNG as being a bottleneck for you. Have you looked at trying rsyslog instead?
We have not. I mean, I've said it could be a bottleneck. It hasn't been one yet. And so as soon as we start bumping up into that limit, which we haven't seen yet, you know, we're still handling tens of gigs of data without any problems, we might look at something else. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Hi. Well, first, add my vote to open sourcing it. I'm actually about to implement something very similar. So, you know, if I could just contribute to existing code, that would definitely be much better. And two, I'm curious if you have to deal with, or if VTech deals with persisting the variables and like handling restarts of.
It does actually, and I didn't have a chance to get into that. But the variable server does have a backup thread that runs all the time. So it's a short period, like every 10 seconds, it'll take all the internal state, serialize it, dump it to disk, and then everything wakes back up and keeps running. And that allows us to persist through restarts. So if you do a VTech restart, it basically just pauses for 10 seconds to make sure everything has written everything to disk. It restarts, and when it restarts, it fetches that data back out of off disk and reinstantiates all the in-memory structures.
Hi, Asher from Twitter. I'm curious about the VTech server, the profile, the performance characteristics of it. Is that like a standalone server?
What we're using right now, our biggest VTech server is 4 vCPUs on 2.9 gigahertz Opteron processors, and it's a VM with like 4 gigs of memory. So by hardware standards, it's pretty mediocre, but obviously you can see that it could scale bigger and bigger and bigger. We could, you know, you could put lots and lots of rule engines, even intensive rule engines, and as long as you can keep feeding them data, they'll just keep cranking because it'll spread across all the CPUs.
Have you thought about using like a distributed key value store for the VTech backend? Seems like that's what people would use nowadays.
I've looked at it when those things started showing up, mm-hmm. you know, your MapReduce and those little, you know, neat things where you could do these distributed key value stuff. It looks neat and great. Again, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We were in a position where this has been working, and we think it's going to scale as far as we're going to need it for the foreseeable future. If it starts falling over before our hardware keeps getting faster to keep up, then we may end up looking at something like that.
Okay.